It's truly a great joy to come together for bringing in the new year. I've done this for so many years that I can't imagine any other way of bringing in the new year. And to bring it in with lovers of God, and to make this a special occasion, is really terrific. There are those who would be like to be here tonight and cannot be. But Jerry Trofimchuk sent some quotes that I think were wonderful. One was from Sir Winston Churchill. And it says, "Success is the ability to go from one failure to another with no loss of enthusiasm." And he knew whereof he spoke, because he was in the wilderness years for many years, where he had a lone voice. He was ridiculed and put down and ostracized, and he hung in there. And as a result, he turned into a tremendous force for good in the world. And from George Bernard Shaw, "Better keep yourself clean and bright. You are the window through which you must see the world." Something to think about. And Charmy sent one. She didn't. She sent the quote, but she wasn't. Didn't send who the author was. "As we go forth into the coming year, let it not be in the haste of impetuous, unremembering delight, nor with the flight of impulsive thoughtlessness, but with the patient power of knowing that the God of Israel goes before us. Our yesterdays present irreparable things to us. It is true that we have lost opportunities which shall never return, but God can transform this destructive anxiety into a constructive thoughtfulness for the future. Leave the irreparable past in His hands and step into the irresistible future with Him." Wonderful. And a quote from Papa, the quote of the day: "The sense of possession is a great obstacle to the realization of God. The idea of I and mine must disappear entirely before the aspirant can find absolute freedom and peace in union with God. Verily, everything belongs to the Lord who dwells in the hearts of all creatures and things. Attachment to any external object narrows our vision, fosters egoism, and gives rise to the false notion that we are separate from God, i.e., from the universal life and spirit. The whole universe is permeated through Him and through with God. The visible and the invisible worlds are all He. There is nothing and none but He. All is He. Such is the truth. Where then is the room for ideas of I and you, mine and yours? All are He." You can sense in the tremendously powerful writing from Papa how inebriated he was with the realization of God. It seems like everything that he wrote was permeated with the power of God. He wrote from that highest state of realization. And it's wonderful to read his words and to absorb them into our being. I'd like to read you a letter that I've written to all my dear friends. There are copies on the small table on your way out if you would like one. "My dear friends, I wish you a very prosperous new year, a prosperous year of health, with abundant life energy, a physical body that reflects the divine light, material prosperity in which you attract all goodness flowing to you and your ability to pass it on to others, an abundance of positive and creative thoughts that are attuned to divine wisdom and a wealth of spiritual qualities, deep abiding peace, and an effervescent joy bubbling from your inmost being. As you and I welcome in the new year, we can do this from three perspectives: the past, the present, and the future. In reality, all three of these perspectives are all present in the here and now. However, the mind uses these three ways of knowing, so we can make use of them as well in a constructive way. As you think back on this past year, do so with an eye for learning. There are lessons in the positive and the negative that you can take with you. Ask yourself, what did I do well? Really, what did you do well? You may like to write down these answers to the questions, as writing impresses the brain in a way that a quick mental review does not. So often, we skip over the positive, almost as if doing well is just how things should be. However, you made choices to do some things well. You cultivated new habits, new friendships. You made courageous decisions. There is no person who is all good in this world, nor is there anyone who is all bad. You cannot say you did no good. That is not possible. So what did you do well? Think on this with an eye for learning and reinforcement. Say, yes, I want to do more of that. Make that positive thing stronger, more consistent. Then, with an eye for learning, what went wrong in this last year? Wrong decisions you made, habits that got the better of you, negative relationships that you played a part in. When you look at these, think, what led to that negative decision? Then imagine that you had that decisive moment back to do all over again, only with the hard-won wisdom you now have, along with all the distress that past decision brought to you and others. Sharpen your sword, cutting off a habit or relationship that is not right. Surround yourself in the light of God and gurus, and see yourself strong instead of weak. Know that there is nothing hidden from God and all His angels, including all your thoughts and actions. Expose yourself to the light and experience the clarity and strength that gives you. You will rewire your brain with new associations when you see yourself in this light, so that you will make new decisions. You will have this clarity and strength in the armory of new habits. As you think of moving into this new year, think of all you want for yourself, for this world. It is an easy habit to think of all that you do not want, letting fears and limitations overwhelm you. However, thoughts create, thoughts lead, and thoughts are the stars that guide you. Therefore, make your thoughts guiding lights that will take you to a safe, ever-growing, and prosperous land of opportunity. Give more weight to what you want rather than thinking of what you do not want. If you have negative thought habits that invade your future thinking, then be careful to rewrite these thoughts. You are made in God's likeness and image, meaning that you have the same creative power that God has, something that you have only just begun to explore. God and the Masters are with you. Your life is opening up to new vistas, ones you only dreamed of before. As you break the shackles of the past and tune into a freedom of creativity, what do you see for yourself? See yourself in ways you can truly believe in, making it the highest and best of what God has in store for you. See yourself meeting and exceeding tests that may come your way, shining with an inner glory. Now you feel that inner strength and clarity, even as old negative habits come at you. You stand in charge of yourself, as strong as spirit, in spirit as a spiritual master. Any time a fear or thought of limitation comes to you, immediately replace it with this new and improved thought of yourself. You are creating a spiritual future for yourself that will permeate every aspect of your life. In this present moment, you have all that your heart's desire has ever yearned for. The presence of the Divine One is here. It is now. The bliss, the joy, the expanded consciousness that makes you know you are one with the Infinite is with you now. This knowledge, this awareness that you have God consciousness is the greatest gift of comprehension a soul can have. Yet even though we hear the words, too many do not have the ears to hear. With this greatest gift in hand, what does the mind do? The mind constantly reviews the past and anticipates the future. The mind's tendency is to be anywhere, anytime, other than here and now. The exception to this rule is when the body is in intense pain or pleasure. Yet even this intensity of the senses obscures the presence that always resides within. Recently, this body was infected with a cold for the first time in years. Fever, headache, congestion came to stay for about a week. It was interesting to observe what the mind did with all this sensory stimulus. In the past, I would have said, I am sick. However, as I had awareness of what the body was feeling, I was even more aware of the divine presence within. I would not say, I am sick. Rather, this body has a visitor. Its name is a cold. The I of the self was not sick, did not feel sick. I felt the inner presence, which was not touched by the symptoms and remained free throughout the time. My voice was hoarse and at times non-existent. Fever came and went. A cough was my constant companion. Yet the inner sense of I was unchanged. This I, this self of which I speak, is with you now. Whatever your condition, whether you are healthy or sick, prosperous or poor, in warm weather or cold, in sunshine or darkness, in peace or war, the Divine Self is with you, a constant witness and presence that is ever free of your passing conditions. Just think of your life lived in that presence, to feel that supreme peace and inner assurance at all times. Think of carrying that presence with you into the coming year, moment by moment, feeling its transcendent influence so that at all times you rise above your immediate conditions and know who and what you truly are. We sometimes think that saints and great spiritual masters do not encounter what we mere mortals have to endure. Yet when we really study their lives, we come to see that they have lived it all. Mother lived through great poverty, was a single mother of three, was cold and did not have enough to eat. Jesus rode into Jerusalem in great triumph, only to find a few days later that he was sentenced to a cruel death. Ram was a prince, married to the love of his heart, only to be sent penniless into the jungle, and then his wife was kidnapped without any knowledge of where she was or whether he would be able to get her back. Krishna was born a prince, only to have his uncle constantly trying to kill him. He lived a life of many challenges, and then in the end, his own family members violently turned against him and his brother in a drunken rage. Buddha left his family and comforts of a princely life for enlightenment, and in the end of his life was ended when he was poisoned. Now, if these tragedies come to the greatest of God's children, his avatars, then how are we to think that we will be immune? And if God realization does not guarantee a comfortable life without difficulty, then what are we doing our spiritual practice for? Surely, as Lari Mahasya said, if we are sincere in our spiritual practice today, then our future will improve. However, what God's great ones have demonstrated is not a life of ease, but rather a life of overcoming, transcendence. Swami Pranabhananda, the saint with two bodies, attained the highest in realization and left the body consciously, telling one of his chief disciples that he is going to kick the frame. And then he left his body while in front of a large group. Even though he is one of the greatest disciples of Lari Mahasya, he was seriously addicted to marijuana in his earlier years. There is nothing that you are meeting in the way of adversity that has not been met and overcome by these great spiritual masters. There is great strength in knowing that whatever condition you find yourself in, there is hope, there is redemption, the ultimate promise of rising up and knowing the truth of your being. Let us, in this new year, let this new year be a new year of tapping into your great potential and becoming the spiritual master God made you to be. There are no spare parts to this creation. There are no throwaways. All has come from God and all must return. That includes you. Be open to the highest power and inspiration coming into your mind, heart, and soul, even now. Feel that you are unleashing the great potential you were born with, and boldly walk into the future. You are light and wisdom made manifest in a human being. Realize this great truth, and celebrate a new year, a new life. I would like to speak to you about building the palace of possibilities. Every new year, I think we all think about the things that, in particular, that we did not accomplish. We set out, perhaps, at the beginning of last year with the greatest of intentions to do something, to change a habit, to accomplish some goal. And perhaps we made some efforts at it, but we didn't go the whole way. One of the great things that we learn from Master is the development of individual will. Now, willpower, for a long time, has taken a beating. There are people who don't want to exercise will. They think of it as being tyrannical, as a way of losing freedom. That if you don't exercise will, you are somehow able to live without any restraints. But common sense and observation will tell us this is not true. Only through will and discipline can we really attain a sense of freedom. There's a paradox in this. Because the ego would like to say, well, I would just like to go with the flow, meaning with whatever presents itself in the moment. What the body wants, what the senses want, what the ego wants. And when we live in this way, we walk down a blind alley, and it gets darker, and it gets narrower, and it gets more difficult, until we finally realize we have made a great mistake. Sri Yukteswar was a great believer in living a life of discipline, of regular, steady practice. Master was different in that, in the sense that he was somebody who responded to the spirit in the moment. And sometimes, being the originator of an organization, that drove the people who tried to organize him crazy. He didn't organize so well. He didn't keep the schedule in the way that others would like him to keep, because he was responding to the spirit. But in order to reach that attainment, he first had to pass through the fires of testing of Sri Yukteswar. I was once in college taking an English class, and I like to take liberties with the English language, and I think there are times when I probably made up words and was creative in my use of sentence structure and so on. And so my professor took me aside one day and he says, first, you have to learn all the rules. Then you can start to break them, but with knowledge. And this is true of a spiritual master as well. You cannot live a full, free life until you have learned to submit yourself to the divine will, to exercise your will, to go against what your body wants at times, what your ego wants at times. It wants all kinds of things. If we allow the senses to guide us, it'll take us on a merry chase. And we can see much in the world today where people have just let loose and let go with their ego. They accept and do not think about anything higher in their lives. They do not feel themselves accountable to any spiritual notion that there is something above them. And this is a great mistake. There is no humility in it. And also there is no freedom in it. There are many who do not want to have a spiritual teacher because they don't want accountability. They don't want to be accountable to God or anyone else. And so they go from teaching to teaching. They go from class to class. They take and pick and choose what they want. But it doesn't get them to the goal. It doesn't get them where they really, truly, in their deepest of their soul, really want to be. When we look at the lives of the great saints, of the great masters, we see there the examples of how to reach the pinnacle of life. We see there submission. We see there tremendous focus of attention. When you are willing to focus your attention upon God, despite what others in your life think about you and think about your decisions, then you have really put your feet upon the path. But if you do not do so out of some reluctance of what others will think, you are now being tyrannized by what you think other people will think about you. And that is a great tyrant, I can tell you. God has put me into many interesting circumstances where I have faced the choice of whether to surrender or not. Years ago, I went down to Mount Washington in Los Angeles. I wanted to see where Master had lived and the grounds there. I got there before the grounds officially opened. I wasn't sure what time it was. I made my way up the hill. And when I arrived there, the opening time, I believe, was 9 o'clock, but it was perhaps before 8:30. And so I was with another person, and we both kind of snuck into the grounds because the gate wasn't locked. A little push opened it up, and I felt bold, so we went in. I wanted to see this place. I thought the worst they could do is throw us out. We'd come back again at 9. So in we came. We went to the wishing well that is now enclosed in a small house, but at the time it was open to the elements. And suddenly a tremendous spiritual power took me over. And it made me begin to walk in particular ways. And I walked around the wishing well 3 times. And then a very odd thing happened. I had to walk backwards 3 times back around the well. Well, the person with me was getting a little disconcerted. They felt a little self-conscious being there in the first place because we had snuck onto the grounds. And here I was acting in this very strange manner that might call attention to itself. So then Ram, in his little sense of humor and for his own purpose, took me backwards, walking down the sidewalk, down to a little street next to the mansion there, and then backwards, and I was walking backwards all the way around the tennis courts with my eyes closed. I didn't have any idea where I was going or what God was doing with me. Well, the other person finally had had enough. They felt very self-conscious and afraid, so they left. But I couldn't. I felt I was in the grip of God. And he made me walk all the way around those tennis courts, back up the sidewalk, back up to the wishing well. I walked 3 times backwards around the wishing well, and then 3 times forward. And then this power, it felt like a magnetic power surrounding my whole being. It released me and let me go. Well, a little later, a nun came out, and she saw me there and asked what I was doing, and I told her. The experience had let me go by this time. And she said, well, there's going to be a fire drill. I don't want you to be alarmed. And later on, I'll send one of the monks out to give you a tour. She had a wonderful light in her eyes. And so the fire drill happened, and everybody came out, and then everybody went back in. And I was there. And she came back out again. And I just felt the power of God. She didn't tell me her name, and I didn't think to ask at the time, and I'm sorry that I didn't. She was an elderly woman at the time, and I don't know whether she would still be living or not. But I felt the power of God in her. And then there was another nun there who was talking about Master, and she had been there when Master had and was telling stories. And I didn't feel the power of God in her nearly as much as I did with Mother, or with this other woman, excuse me. But I talked to her about Mother. And she said, yes, she remembered Mother. And then I asked her if I could ask her about the Kriya and whether it had been changed. And she said, yes, it had. And she confirmed that Master, all of his life, taught it the way that Mother taught it. So it was very interesting. Now, generally, Mother didn't want us presenting herself as her disciples, but this woman had asked me several times. She said, you must be a Kriyaban. And I said, no. Well, I said, yes, but I'm not part of SRF. And so she kept on inquiring. So finally I told her about Mother. On another occasion, I was down at Encinitas, and I told the woman who was running the bookstore, she wore some kind of robe there. I don't know if she is a renunciant or not. But I was telling her that Master was my Param Guru. And she shot right back at me and said, no, he cannot be. And I felt this, like I'd been slugged in the stomach, right in the solar plexus, with a punch. And it disturbed me. It distressed me. And so that night, I was thinking about this. I was still feeling the distress from that experience. And so I looked up in the Bible at random. And there it was a quote from St. Paul. And it said, in essence, that he was one of his letters. And he said, I hear that you are arguing. Some of you are saying that you were baptized by Stephen, and others by me, and others by Peter. I tell you, the only thing that matters is the Christ. And when I read that, it set my soul free. All that ugliness that I had felt from that punch in the solar plexus was gone instantly. And I knew that what I got from Mother was just right for me. And it was my pathway to God. This is a wonderful thing to know deep within your own being. It is something that only God can confirm to you. But when He does, it puts you on your path. And you don't swerve to the left or to the right, but you give it your all. When I was growing up, I looked around in this world, and I looked for something to believe in, something that would draw my interest. And I could never give myself 100% to anything, because I didn't feel that it was true or genuine in my soul. But when I met Mother for the first time, I felt, this is something I can give myself to. This search for realization, this path, this journey, this truth that Mother is teaching me, I felt the power of her words. I felt that they came from God. I did not understand everything that she said. She talked about Christ consciousness. I had no idea what that meant. I knew that I wasn't Christian in a traditional sense, but I also felt, in the way that Mother spoke, that neither was she. She was speaking to something else. I had not read the autobiography of a yogi or other great many other books. I had read some books about meditation and about the East. But I was a neophyte in that sense. And so when Mother used some terminology I didn't fully comprehend, I just opened myself to what she might mean. I was shy and embarrassed, and so I didn't ask many questions. But I kept coming back. And most of all, I wanted that experience. I wanted to feel God in the room. I wanted to feel Mother's presence. And it was through her that I felt the upliftment and the transformation. And each time I would come back and I would wonder, will it be the same this time? Will I feel that same transformative power? And every time I did. And this is what convinced me down to my soul, this is the right path for me. And gradually, gradually, my understanding began to unfold. I knew that I didn't know, but I also felt that I was on the right path, that there are many things that would have to be explained to me, but that it couldn't all come through logic. It couldn't all come through a verbal explanation. I needed God. I needed God realization. I knew that I was not here just to simply fill my mind, to learn a different language, to learn just some asanas or some postures or some meditations. These are fine. They are steps towards realization, but they are not the goal. The goal is nothing short of complete and total realization. I mentioned Swami Paramahansa in the letter, and he was a tremendous saint, and he was a tremendously realized master. When Master was asked how many of the souls that he wrote about, the many saints that he wrote about in the autobiography of a yogi, how many were fully realized? And Swami Paramahansa was one of the few that he said was fully realized. That was the saint with two bodies, if you remember the story from the autobiography of a yogi. And so he was tremendous, but he went through a very, very difficult time. He had received Kriya Yoga. He was still smoking ganga or marijuana, a strong marijuana, and he was very addicted to it. He was working for Master's father in the train business at the time. And one day, he had finally had it. He realized he was an addict, and something had to change. And he stayed home, and for 3 days, he stayed in bed, and he shook, and he shivered, and he was in fever, and he just absolutely refused until the spell broke. And finally it did. And then he was released from it. I had my own bout with marijuana. And it was a seductive kind of drug that I took into my system. And one day, as Mother was greeting me at the back of the service, she looked up at me and she shook her finger at me and she said, "No smoking and no drinking." I said, "I know, Mother, I know." I said, "I get around old friends and associates, and it just happens." And so, she gave me a look that was like unmovable law. And I knew what I had to do. And some months went by, and I kept on with the habit, and not frequently, but occasionally. And she looked at me again. We never spoke about this, not once. And she looked up and she shook her finger at me and she said, "No smoking and no drinking." I didn't smoke cigarettes, but I smoked those funny little cigarettes, you know. And I said, "Well, Mother," and for some reason, my father came up. I could care less what my father thought or did, but I thought maybe he had leverage with her because he was from that generation, you know. So I said, "Well, Mother, what if my father offers me a drink New Year's Eve?" She didn't look impressed at all. And she said, "You can have sociability or you can have Christ consciousness. You choose." And she moved me right on out. And I was faced with a choice. What would I do? Would I be influenced by people that I was around? Would I care what they say, you know? Young people are quite cruel to each other when somebody steps out and is a little bit different. And so what would happen? Would I lose my friends? I was determined not to lose them. And yet, the differences were being showing up and the commonalities were becoming less and less. And so I realized I had to make a choice. And the last time that I smoked, I felt that what felt like a poison going down into my spine, from my lungs down into my spine. I could feel it working its way up my spine. You see, I was practicing Kriya, so it was becoming quite sensitive in this way. And it felt like a poison and began to numb my spine. And I thought, my goodness, what have I done to myself? You see, it runs in contradiction to awakening because it puts you to sleep. It numbs you. It numbs your nervous system. It slows down everything. And it takes away from initiative. And so I saw that so clearly. And that was the last time. The last time. And so finally I broke that spell, but it was a year where I would smell it and taste it when there wasn't anything around me at all. But it was a strong, strong habit that was inside of me. And I had to fight it. And I had to make a choice. We all have to choose. We all have our Achilles heel in one way or another. There are those things that draw us back. We know what they are. Nobody has to tell us. We know what they are. We know those things that we must face and eventually overcome. And all things are possible. All things are possible. God has put you on a path. And He does not do so and then abandons you or leaves you without friend or help. When you put your whole self onto the path, you know, as I mentioned before, I always felt like I was living life with one foot in and one foot out. It was my escape valve. What if it didn't work out? What if I didn't make it? I didn't want to look foolish. I didn't want to look like a failure, so I didn't put myself 100% into anything. But I knew with this path, it is not 50% or 75% or 85%. None of that is enough. It could only be 100%. And I knew deep in myself that this path promised the kind of thing that I was really yearning for. I really wanted. And so I had to put myself 100% into the circle. Come hell or high water, come rain or snow, whatever was to come, I was committed. I was there. And I have never looked back and I have never regretted it. And I can say truly that it's probably the only thing in this world that I've ever put myself 100% into. And that's fine with me. Because now, by putting myself in totally with God, whatever God directs me to do, I must put myself 100% into that. Not for the sake of the outcome, in a worldly sense, but because that is what God wants from me. And therefore, it is what I want. To let go of fear is the greatest thing in this world that you can do. It is the most freeing thing. There is a wonderful saint in India who interviewed me, and he asked me many questions. And one of the things he asked me is, do you have fear? And I honestly looked inside of myself, and I said, no, Swami, I don't have any fear. I don't detect anything at all. And at the end of the interview, he told his disciples who were sitting around, he knows. He knows. Now, you cannot have fear and have God realization. It's not possible. They are contradictory. Now, it doesn't mean that you're never startled by anything or that you don't have a physical reaction of being startled in that manner. What it means is that you don't entertain fears. You don't let them bind you. You don't let them keep you down. You have freed yourself from the fear. And as a result, you feel love. Can you imagine living in this world filled with love for all creation? You cannot have love and have fear. There is the wonderful story of Valmiki. And Valmiki wrote the Ramayana, one of the great scriptures of India. And Valmiki, like many saints, maybe worse than most many saints, but he started out as a real scoundrel. He was a robber. He was a murderer. He was cruel. And he was selfish. And one day, the messenger from heaven was walking along on the path, Narada. And when Narada came to Valmiki, Valmiki jumped down onto the path and he was fierce, fierce. He was loaded with weaponry. He was there to rob him. But when he looked at Narada, he saw something in his eyes he had never seen before. And it made him stop in his tracks. And he asked him, "Who are you? You are looking at me in a manner that no one has ever looked at me before." And Narada said, "Oh, why is that?" He says, "I don't know. Most people, when I approach them like this, they try to defend themselves. If they do, I kill them and rob them. Or they try to run away, in which case I kill them and I rob them. But you're just standing there looking at me in this most unusual way." And Narada said, "I'm looking at you with love." Valmiki had never encountered that before. And it stopped him right in his tracks. Narada says, "I have a question for you." Valmiki said, "Yes." He says, "You rob people, you kill, you harm people. You know about karma and the law of karma?" He says, "You know you'll have to pay for this." And Valmiki shrugged his shoulders and then he said, "Yeah, I suppose so." He said, "Why do you do it?" He says, "Well, I have to feed my family. You know, I have to take care of everybody." He said, "Well, will your family share with you in your karma? Will they help you to pay the price when the time comes?" "I think so. I assume so." "Well, why don't you go and ask them? I'll sit here and wait." So Valmiki went to his family and he asked them. And one by one, they all said no. The wife said, "That's your job to bring home the bacon, and I don't care how you do it, that's your job, but I'm not going to pay your karma for you." And the sons and the daughters, and nobody was willing. And so Valmiki came back, and he put himself on the path, and he began to chant the name of Ram. And he did it over and over and over again until his mind was completely purified. And he was no longer the murderous thug. He had been transformed by those eyes of love, that the love of God shone through that great sage and saint Narada. And it transformed his life. Now, can you imagine living such a life that you look out through those same eyes that Narada looked out through, the eyes of love upon this world? Instead of seeing fault, instead of seeing everything that's wrong, instead of seeing everything that is not of God, you look first to see God in all beings. First you find God within yourself, and then you see Him reflected within all creation. This is Christ consciousness, to come to that state of consciousness where you see them. Now, with our thoughts, we are always building. We are constantly building. And even as Babaji made through thought-trons a wonderful palace up in the Himalayas. I've been up to what is called Babaji's cave up there. It's a wonderful place, and there's a bare spot on the hill that's not far from the cave. And it is said that that's the very spot where the palace was constructed by Babaji. But this entire palace that was true to the senses for Lari Maharshi had satisfied every desire he had had for seeing such a wonderful place was constructed right through the will and the thought of those great, great spiritual masters. You know, when masters come into the causal plane, they can create entire universes. The power of their thought is tremendous. Tremendous. And so he had constructed this palace. You construct your life every day. What you project, what you think, what you put your mind to is a creative powerhouse. And you have to be responsible for the ways you direct your mind, because that directs your ship of life. Wherever you point your mind is where you go to. That's something to think about. There is absolute accountability. It is like mathematics. You can make all the excuses in the world. Well, this person treated me badly. That situation didn't work out right for me. Therefore, I have every reason to moan and complain and grumble and keep my mind everywhere except where it should be, upon God. And you can do that, and you have free right to do it. But you are also the recipient of your thoughts. You are building castles and palaces every single day. Are you building something that is beautiful? Are you building something that is in attunement with God? Or are you just simply going about your own way, constructing things in your own manner? As I say, you have the right to do so. You have free will. But you will also face the consequences of what you do. This new year, we oftentimes make new resolutions. And what I implore you to do is to make a resolution as never before, to keep your mind upon the highest and purest aspect of God. You know, sometimes we think, well, I'm just this one little human being walking like an ant upon this mud ball, the earth. What difference does it make what I think, what I do? It makes a great deal of difference. As I wrote about in the Dear Friends, there are no throwaways. There are no mistakes. There are no cast-offs in this world. Everything has come from God, and everything shall return to God. And eventually we turn ourselves towards the light, and we make our way back to that infinite kingdom. Now, God does not punish us, but we punish ourselves based on the things that we create, because we have to face those things. We have to face every fear. We have to face every desire. We have to face everything that we've created on our outward journey from the divine consciousness. And so we can pay now, or we can pay with interest later. It is completely up to us, but we must pay. That is the law of this universe. That is the law of God. And so we must choose every day, every moment. What kind of palaces do you build? Can you build a palace filled with divine perception? Filled, as Babaji was described, sitting in this palace with meditating souls all around him, attuning themselves to the highest divine light. You know, sometimes we think, oh, if I were meditating all the time, well, I would get bored after a while, wouldn't I? You know, you are touching into the very source of creation. Can you imagine that? The power, the intelligence, the creativity, the everythingness that we see in this creation outside is but a reflection of just an aspect of the glory of the divine consciousness that you can explore right within you. Nothing could be further from the truth that it is boring, that you will be stuck. That is the ego consciousness projecting onto God what it thinks God must be. You don't become stuck up. You don't become, uptight. None of it. That is all ego projections. You become free. You become in touch with that which has made some of the greatest personalities the world has ever known. You think of Mother. You think of Master. You think of Sri Yukteswar, Lahari Mahasaya, Babaji. Are these non-entities? Are these non-personalities? Are these uninteresting people? Papa, Swamiji, Mataji. These are dynamic individuals. They're wonderful. They're inspired. They're filled with joy and humor. They're filled with life. This is the paradox of the spiritual path. You surrender everything and return. You receive everything. So let us make a renewed vow. Not just for this year or not just for today, but for every day, for every moment, that we will be determined to explore the vast body of God, that we will be determined not to give in to old tendencies that restrict us and keep us playing small. You are not here to play small. You are here to play in the infinite field of the kingdom of heaven. And it is vast, and it is powerful, and it is filled with light and joy and bliss and love and everything that your heart desires. This is the spiritual palace that you have come to build and to explore by God flowing through you and instructing you and guiding you and bringing you into that most beautiful and wonderful kingdom. Sit for a few moments in meditation. Tremendous power of God. I feel Mother as close can be. I feel Master and all the great masters. How is it that they could be here with us? Because they live in omniscience. They're not restricted to being in one place and not someplace else. There's the beautiful story of Hanuman. You know, whether these mythical stories are based in historical truth or not, there is a spiritual power that is behind each and every one of them. And for some reason, I have a very special fondness for Hanuman. But Hanuman, when Ram was leaving this earth, had a conversation with Ram, and Ram said, "You are going to stay here," as if he knew that there is some determination made in the soul that Hanuman maintain his body. And Hanuman knew the truth of it. And Ram said, "Wherever the story of Ram and wherever there is singing of Ram, my name," he said, "you will always go to that place." And it is said, wherever that name of Ram is sung with devotion, Hanuman shows up in spirit and he has tears flowing down his eyes because he feels such great love for the divine within him and everywhere around him. And the spiritual masters are very much the same. When you have devotion in your heart, you create a powerful magnet that they cannot resist. It is a spiritual magnet, and it draws them. And they delight in being drawn. And they feel it. And they know you. This is not just simply a state of imagination, but it has been verified through thousands of years of experience. And many here have had such powerful experiences of knowing great masters who come to them. One time, one day, Master was asked, "You were speaking about a saint the other day who came to you in body from the past that you were thinking of, and I don't remember who you said it was." And Master said, "I'm afraid I can't help you." He says, "I have so many different ones come to me at different times, I don't recall which one you're referring to." It is because of his great love of God and of saints. How could a saint resist his call? When you build that kind of magnetism within yourself, then you will know that truth. God cannot resist your call, nor can God within any form resist your love. And they delight in sharing with you the love for the infinite, the love for God, that spiritual vibration. They cannot get enough of it. Imagine going for such long, long periods of time and just feeling, always feeling, as if you're just beginning, like you were a neophyte, just beginning to comprehend the divine consciousness, just beginning to explore, just beginning to open a new door. You see what the human mind does. It always wants to constrict. It always wants to put a box around something, put a label on it, and say, "All right, I know that now." How ridiculous when it comes to God. God is infinite. Do we not understand that? And yet, we feel satisfied with a few crumbs from the table, and we walk away as if we have had something. And all we've had is a few crumbs. There is something tremendous afoot. And we must grasp it. We must yearn for it. We must open our hearts to it. Or it will just simply pass us by in the night. And we will be the poorer for it, because we did not keep our lamps filled. We did not stay in a state of readiness and preparedness and openness and receptivity. We did not do it. And the Spirit passes us by. God delights in revealing himself to you. God delights in the mind and the heart and the soul that is open to him, who thrills at his every nuance and becomes drunk with his bliss. Alcohol and drugs are such a poor, poor substitute for bliss. It just shows people's lack of imagination and spiritual attunement that they would accept such a poor imitation. And so let us more than ever attune ourselves to that divine consciousness, opening ourselves to all that God is.